Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning, committee members.
It is Monday, April 18th, 2005. This is a public hearing on House Bill 5038. It relates to the budget for Department of Human Services, Department-wide Support Services. And we'll begin with kind of an overview from Ms. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In front of you, in addition to today's agenda and the week's agenda, you have a memo from me. It's dated April 14th. These were not handed out in advance, so we'll just walk through them at this meeting today. Attached to that is a copy of our LFO analysis of the 2005-07 governor's budget. I will be talking about things at a very high level, and if you want specific number detail, that's in that written document, so you can refer to that. And then we will have a presentation from the Budget and Management Division from Jan Dean, and you have that handout in front of you. And then the agency will walk us through their Phase 2 presentation, and we're back in the big, fat DHS presentation binders for that piece of the presentation. So if you want to look at your memo, Department of Human Services, Department-Wide Support Services, Phase 2 Overview, I've reiterated the agency mission and then noted that Department-Wide Support Services, which I will hereinafter usually refer to as DWSS for purposes of time, that supports the department's mission by providing leadership in the delivery of efficient, consistent, and coordinated administrative services to all units of the department. So that's what DWSS is for. I've identified three primary programs, although they're not programs in the typical sense, but they're functions within DWSS, which I should note is a budget structure for budgeting purposes, but organizationally it includes these three organizational areas: the Office of the Director, Administrative Services, which is the bulk of the staffing and activity in this budget cluster, and then the finance and policy analysis function. As a whole, what DHS provides is support to the department, and so the department itself is the direct customer of the DWSS services. But I've also noted external customers, which include, of course, the clients, other state agencies, the governor's office, the legislature, tribal and local governments, and then the general public. The one issue I've highlighted there is that the agency has to have sufficient central administrative capacity, but of course nobody wants to have excess administrative capacity. And so the challenge is to balance that so that they can meet their basic business needs, particularly monitoring and reporting. But they are looking at continuing caseload changes in the programs, program and policy changes, both federal, state, and program management issues. The resources in DWSS, or the budget of this area, isn't directly earned by changes at the program level. So prior to reorganization, where many of these administrative functions were out in the what used to be the divisions of DHS, a lot of times what happened, the way the budget worked, was that as program changes were made, there were related administrative costs that were included in those numbers. Now they're separated out, and so we look at the administrative cost somewhat separately in many cases from the program changes. And so that's both a blessing and a curse, I guess, for the agency, in that we are able to look at those, and they are able to look at those in terms of what makes the most administrative sense. But it occurs in the sense that sometimes we may decide that they don't need resources that they believe that they do. On the top of the next page, the heading is Budget Notes, Emergency Board Actions, and Audit Findings. And so I've highlighted those for you. I would suggest that if you have substantial questions in these areas, that we can have the agency address those later, but I did want to highlight these areas. The first is budget notes, and there were three of them that related to DWSS in the agency's budget report from 2003. The first one relates to matching up accounting program structure and budgetary structures. The second one relates to a report that was to be provided on the collection, analysis, and presentation of DHS financial information. And then the third one relates to a staffing study, which is underway. One of the issues last session was looking at supervisory to worker ratios, looking at staffing levels overall in the department. And so there is a staffing study underway. It's focusing on three areas, food stamp, Medicaid eligibility, and adult protective services. There is a steering committee for that group. Our next meeting is, in fact, this next Wednesday, and the timeline calls for a draft report May 25th. So by the end of May, we should be able to have some information from that.
Will they be meeting with you next Wednesday?
This Wednesday, the steering committee is meeting, yes. It's the contractor and the the agency people, budget management division, and our office, and the private sector representatives of the steering committee. Then the next bullet addresses emergency board actions during the biennium, and what I've noted there were the changes from the budget rebalancing plans during the biennium. Overall, the DWSS budget was reduced by those actions. There were positions added, and I've noted that two-thirds of the 36 positions added were transferred from elsewhere in the department. So as they're still reorganizing, I guess, is the bottom line. As positions are identified that need to be centralized in the DWSS function, then those are moved into that. There were new positions added for enhanced collection recoveries, for information system work related to the Home Care Commission that was funded during the last session, and then to start work on the Medicare Modernization Act. And as we get into the budget, you'll see collection recovery positions and Medicare Modernization Act positions again requested in the budget. Those were limited duration during this interim, and so we need to revisit those issues. Next bullet addresses Secretary of State audits. There was a change of director review when Jean Thorne left office in 2004. There were no significant findings from that review. And then there were two reviews, audits that were done as part of the statewide single audit for related to statewide financial statements, and those were advised in management letters of February 04 and 05 that the Secretary of State found some findings and conditions which required a response from the agency. It's not uncommon for agencies to have some findings. There was some disagreement on some of those issues between the department and the Secretary of State, but also this kind of review gives the agency some opportunities to do some improvements in various areas that the Secretary of State suggests needs work. And if you're interested in more information on that, I do have a copy of both the initial report from Secretary of State and the agency's follow-up, and I could make copies available to you later. But not being an accountant type, I don't necessarily want to pretend to be an expert on either the findings or the responses thereto.
I'd like to have copies of that.
Okay. And then I note that the audits division is currently working on an applications control review, and this is supposed to be done by the end of April. At the top of the next page, I try to refresh your memory about the revenue sources in this budget. It's about 29% general fund, 15% other funds, 56% federal funds. Other funds are primarily overpayment recoveries from Medicaid and other funding sources. The federal funds are primarily administrative reimbursement for Medicaid, TANF, foster care and adoption assistance, Medicare, and other federal funding sources. The last part of this memo identifies what I see as the major issues that you'll want to think about as you're looking at the DWSS budget. And as with all of the Department of Human Services budgets, the numbers in the governor's budget we expect will change once we get the 2003-05 budget rebalance and then that moves forward into repricing, if you will, for 2005-07. We call that repricing of 2005-07 the reshoot. So once we get the governor's budget reshoot for 2005-07, we expect that these governor's budget numbers will change, but we expect that the issues would still be on the table. So what you will see as we talk about this budget is that work is continuing on the Medicaid Management Information System Replacement Project and the statewide automated Child Welfare Information System Replacement Project will really be getting underway in this next biennium. Both of those projects are primarily funded with certificates of participation up front, and then general fund is used to pay the debt service on those over time. And then those certificates of participation, the proceeds from that are used to generate the federal match on those projects. There were improvements during the interim to the caseload forecasting function in the department. And as I noted, there were some additional positions added for overpayment collections during the interim. Both of those issues have packages in the budget that would continue those expansions. We'll hear more on Tuesday from the department about the caseload forecasting improvements that they made. So there will be a significant presentation on that. The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, which came into effect several years ago, is being, I guess the best way to say it, is being rolled out through various rules that are being promulgated related to that. The department has been working for several years on various aspects of that act. The current issue is the security rule, and there's a package in the budget that provides some more resources so that they can meet and continue to meet the requirements of that rule. And then there's a change in the Medicaid quality control review requirements, and you'll also see a package requesting additional resources from that. That is something that some other states have been dealing with already on a more of a pilot basis, and they've indicated that they've had additional resources were necessary to allow them to meet those requirements. So the department is looking at that as well. And then you have DWSS costs related to issues in the other budget clusters of the department, including in children, adults, and families, a package to enhance attorney representation for child welfare in court hearings, premium collections for the Oregon Health Plan Standard Program in health services. There's a public health laboratory relocation and a rent increase expected as a result of that, again, in health services. And then the Medicare Modernization Act implementation, primarily in senior with people with disabilities, but there are functions in department-wide support services attached to that. There are staffing and expenditure reductions in the governor's budget, $10.2 million general fund, almost $22 million total funds, 17 position and 17 FTE. Most of that is in information systems expenditures, including staffing and equipment replacement, and the closure of 8 field office buildings. So although there are increases in the governor's budget for the things that we've noted above, there are also reductions in the governor's budget in DWSS as well. And then I note that DHS is one of the 12 agencies that will be involved with the data center consolidation that's happening for the major agencies. This won't affect all of information services in DHS, but it will affect the operations, the mainframe, the network operations, and that kind of thing. We don't know what that dollar impact is yet. They're still working on that. But once the details are known, the plan is not to adjust the individual agency's budgets in the agency budget bill, but to have one consolidated bill that does that. So you may or may not see those adjustments in this subcommittee, but I wanted to make sure that you knew that those would be happening. So I'd be happy to answer questions on that. Or
Senator Westland. But that does not preclude us necessarily, depending on timing, of doing it in 5038. Or is that just a bad idea?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westland, I think the intention is to package them all together instead of splitting them out into the individual budget bills. Not necessarily as a matter of timing, but perhaps as much as a matter of presentation, so that all the numbers can be all in one place and people can see them.
Senator Monis Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Baker, when you said there was a closure of 8 field offices, you don't know what counties those field offices were closed, were you?
7 in East Multnomah County. And
that's what I was thinking.
1 in downtown Multnomah County. It's not a problem.
Mr. Chair, Senator Monis Anderson, I think we'll have the agency address that.
I think the ones that aren't in East Multnomah County are in Gresham.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Jan Dean from Department of Budget and Management.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jan Dean. I'm with the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division. You should have in front of you a copy of my presentation this morning. And on page 2, you can see the charts that show the funding for the Human Services Program area. All funds are on the left, and general fund and lottery funds are on the right. The department as a whole is 98% of the all fund budget. This agency is included in the principal related to human services. And the chart on page 4 gives you a comparison of cluster budget size. At $410.5 million, DWSS is 4% of the DHS budget in total funds. Page 5 is the cluster's budget by fund type. Federal funds are 56% at $231.1 million, and Sheila gave you an idea of those funding sources, which are primarily Medicaid, TANF, Older Americans Act, foster care. General funds are 29% of this cluster's budget at $118.6 million, and other funds are 15%, and they are primarily collection recoveries of Medicaid and other payments. Page 6 illustrates the budget categories. Services and supplies are 64.3% of this cluster's budget, and that's high primarily because this cluster has the information technology, computer support, software purchase, IT hardware, software, that kind of a thing. And unlike other DHS clusters, there isn't a large special payment going out of the department, so it does create a larger S&S budget.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair,
Senator Westman,
could you break down for us what the, I know it's a de minimis amount of money, but what's the special payments? Maybe you said that and I just Monday morninged it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westman, the special payments, I understand there are 3 special payments, one for $450,000, that is the Deaf and Hearing Impaired Access Program, one for $563,000, which is a DAS health policy research payment. DAS sends money to DHS, who matches it and sends money back to Department of Administrative Services. And then $111,000 for OED, the PRISM project, which is the information system, performance measure system.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. On page 7, the chart is intended to provide a funding comparison over time, but the reorganization that this department has gone through makes it very difficult to compare this budget across several biennia. However, 2003-05 and 2005-07 are fairly comparable. With that reorganization, as you've heard, DHS centralized its administrative services, and Sheila did a nice job of talking about some of the reductions that were in the governor's budget, but I will point out that even with those reductions, the general fund is up about $10 million, and that's primarily driven by both the statewide automated child welfare system, the Medicaid management information system, those debt service payments, and then the inflation price list and pension obligation bond. Other funds are also driven by the COP for SACWIS, which is $13.7 million, and the Medicaid management information system, which is $12 million, and then the federal funds increase is largely driven by SACWIS as well. Page 8 Although, as Sheila pointed out, this cluster is affected by workload that hits the other clusters. The drivers for this budget are primarily IT-related. They include the Medicaid Management Information System, which is in the base budget. It's an ongoing project that was approved by an earlier legislative process. It's multi-biennial. The current system that they're working with is unable to process the nearly 1.7 million claims, encounters, and capitation payments that are processed each month. And if we do not implement this system, Oregon may face financial penalties for noncompliance with federal regulations. The SACLIS project is a statewide automated child welfare information system. It's a replacement of the current 30-year-old legacy child welfare system. And that current system is using technology that is both obsolete and unsupportable. And then finally, Sheila did mention the computer and network infrastructure consolidation. This, under the governor's direction to improve both efficiency and effectiveness, the state is consolidating the data clusters of 12 state agencies, and DHS is one of the participants. It's not reflected yet in the budget. We are looking at the estimates, and it will be a reduction in this budget when numbers are finally known, of both FTE and dollars. And that concludes my presentation. If you have questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Are there questions? I guess one general question I'd have is, what's the schedule for the reshoe? Do we know where that's in the works?
Don't turn around and look for help. We're putting you on.
I believe we're hoping May. May.
That's Mr. Chairman. You decide that. Now we're going to be prepared to do it, Mr. Chairman, at your request.
Okay. Any additional questions?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. We'll be prepared to do it May 14th.
Thank you for that comment. Okay.
The only intelligent one I made today. Come on.
And the criteria would be?
Well, it's limited.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And our next portion will be Mr. Weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Gary Weeks, Director of the Department of Human Services, and with me is Cindy Becker, who's the deputy for the department. We appreciate this opportunity to start to talk with you about department-wide social support services. Maybe before I launch into this, I want to reassure Senator Mona Sanderson that our most ambitious and I think our most exciting project is actually in East Multnomah County and in the Gresham area, where you'll hear more about this as this unfolds over the year, but where we're looking to really build our second large integrated service site in partnership with Mount Hood, Portland Community College, the City of Gresham, the county. It's a very exciting plan, and we've talked a little bit about it. But just for the record, we are not closing 8 offices in Gresham. In fact, I think we're going to have some exciting things happening in East County. So with that caveat, let me, I think both the executive and your analysts have done a good job of sort of outlining the issues here. The department-wide social support services reacts really to the needs of the rest of the agency. They are the support arm of the rest of the agency. So when we're talking about major budget drivers and environmental factors, those are reactive to whatever you might do in your decision-making process over the next several weeks with the rest of the agency. There are, however, some key, I think, drivers that Jan has mentioned, and certainly the biggest one is the IT one. We have 3 major projects going on right now. The MMIS system, which we have to correct, and we've talked about this, we'll continue to talk about it so you have as much information as you can before you make a decision. But this is a system we bought from the state of Missouri nearly 20 years ago. It was a fee-for-service system, which we have cannibalized and made into a managed care system over 20 years and just can't continue to operate. So we're in the process of replacing that. I think you may also know that we bid this job out. We're now down to two finalists. EDS and ACS are the two finalists. They'll both be making some pretty in-depth proposals or presentations to us before we make a final decision, which I expect is going to be in early June, and we will have selected a contractor. That contractor, under this RFP, is responsible for the development, the design, the development, the implementation, and eventually the maintenance of this system. So it's a full service deal, and that has, I think, caused some controversy in the sense that it means that there will be some jobs that might have been performed by our own employees that will now be performed by the contractor. And so we've continued to work with our labor folks to assure that we are able to place people when this contract comes into line, or when this project actually comes on the line down the road. But it's a very big contract. There has already been let a sub on this, and that's the quality assurance piece, which went to Fox Systems and the Gartner Group. Both of those groups are acting as quality assurance on this, what will be a very, very large project over the duration of the project. The second project, which Dan didn't mention, is the Express project, and that's the payment system for all the mental health services that we have. We'll have the first module up in early July. Cindy's worked on this more than I have, but the first module will be up. We'll begin developing some of the automatic payment system and stuff through Express in early July. That development is on schedule, on the budget, and right where we want it to be. And then the third, which Jan did mention to you, is the automated child welfare information system, SACWIS, which is just now coming off the ground. So we're going to replace that system over the next few years. These projects are funded by federal funds to different degrees. Some are eligible for 75% federal funding. Some are eligible for 90% federal funding. So they are substantially, as development projects, funded by the federal government. And then we have two projects in which we are important players, and Jan mentioned one of those, and that is the CNIC, which is the Computer and Network Infrastructure Consolidation, moving us from 32 data centers as a state to a single data center and reducing the number of networks that we have. The new building for the CNIC headquarters is under construction now, adjacent to the lottery. And so if you've been out that road and you saw the new construction, that's the new headquarters for our consolidated data center and network operations. DHS will be one of the first to be part of that, one of the first to transition our staff into that building, to move our computing resources over to that building, and so on. So this is a very big shift for us as a state, and certainly for us as an agency, being the largest technology operation in state government right now. And the second project that we're a major player in is the state's computer asset management project, which is really trying to get a grip on, throughout state government, what assets we have in state government, how are we using them, what might we need in the future, and so on. And we're a major player in that. The second area that Jan mentioned has to do with HIPAA. HIPAA, which we have talked about and probably will continue to talk about again more often, is the federal requirement for us to establish policies and rules that pertain to the use, the access, and the distribution of personally identified information that relates to health and mental health, and so on like that. HIPAA, we've all worked on for a number of years. The agency's done several things already. We have developed already our privacy rules and procedures and so on, policies. We have ongoing training for all of our existing employees on what is required by HIPAA, and it will be part of our new employee training for all new employees. We have a permanent full-time, what we call the privacy officer, who runs the privacy program, does all the assurances that, you know, we are protecting individually identified health information. We have an annual administrative, technical, and policy review plan in place that will annually look at everything that we do on how we manage this kind of information to assure that it's used according to federal law. So take this very seriously, but it's a major requirement, really, for DWSS. I mean, it applies also, as you can imagine, to the clusters themselves, but DWSS has the primary lead role for this. There are economic factors, as we point out in our written presentation, that have some impact on direct impact on the clusters, and then subsequent impact on the agent on the DWSS. In other words, as caseloads change, as you make changes on the policy or on certain state-funded programs, that impacts how we assess those, how we deliver the service, how we account for them, how we use the technology programs, and so on like that. So there are economic factors that affect the DWSS program, and then there are changes in federal policy. The President's budget, proposed budget is out. There's a House budget, a Senate budget, and all that will work its way through Congress, but each of those are very different in many ways, and we have to be prepared to respond to the federal budget however it eventually works its way through Congress. And so we rely a lot on the resources of finance and policy, that's FIPA, as well as the other parts of our admin to analyze that federal budget to determine what we have to do to be prepared to manage it and so on. There are other pieces of legislation going through the federal government, such as the reauthorization of the TANF program, Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, which is really the welfare program, and it's largely a work program today to get people that are on public assistance trained, work opportunities, and back into the workforce. Well, any changes that we make, that the federal government make on that program, has implications for department-wide support services and how we support the clusters. So those are some of the things that are in the venue of policy, economics, IT, HIPAA, all of which have some implications for department-wide support services. Let me talk with you a minute about, and I covered this in the very first day, some of the things that we've tried to do over the years to develop a shared services concept within the department. And this began in 1999, and the authority for us to move to shared services was contained in Senate Bill 303 in 1999. And it really means taking all of what were independent operations in human resources, accounting, payroll, budgeting, IT, all those sorts of things that now you see before you in department-wide services were by division before. And it's taken us several years to blend all that together so that we have in one department one set of shared administrative services. And I think it was a terrific accomplishment for the department to have done that. It was no small chore because when you take divisions that have existed for nearly 25 years, each with their own sort of admin function, and then say, well, we're all going to move this to one place and we're going to administer it jointly. It was a difficult change, frankly, for a lot of our folks to deal with, not unlike the consolidation of the data centers and the networks, which are similarly a difficult change for agency heads who have forever maintained their own data operation, their own technology operation, and so on. But that has happened over several years, and so unlike many umbrella state agencies, for example, Washington looks very much like us. They have about 18,000 people. They organize their department the same way we do. But their divisions still have all the same independent authority largely vested there. So this was a big change, and we think it's the right way to run an organization. It's the way that you'd run a business. No business would ever let each one of its divisions have a full administrative complement. So we continue to work on that, and the area that we're, I suppose maybe one of the last areas that we're trying to combine has to do with all of our recovery operations. And Cindy may want to talk more about this because she's been the lead on it. But basically we have throughout the department had different small recovery operations, recovering overpayments, billed charges that shouldn't have been billed, benefits to clients that were above what they should have gotten. And those operations have been piecemeal all around the agency. In this next biennium, we will be bringing all that together. That's already underway. It's already started. And that will probably be one of the last pieces that we have an opportunity to really bring into a shared services model. We have, over the last couple of years, created a information security office, which is described for you in the narrative. We established that office in 2004 of April, so it's been just about a year that we finally established it. It was in the planning for some time. It has three major initiatives for the security office. One is to manage the HIPAA security rule, so to assure that the system, the technology system itself, is meeting all the requirements of HIPAA. The second initiative is for us to have a good, solid business continuity plan, which we have really for the first time. A plan that says, in the event of some disaster, natural disaster or otherwise, we know how we're going to run the agency. We know how we're going to deliver services and so on. And that took a great deal of time for us to create the business continuity plan. That's part of the function now of the security officer and the security office. And the third initiative has to do with access and control to our system itself, making sure that individuals or organizations don't come in and use our system inappropriately or without authorization. And I think I mentioned to you at one point in our testimony that we discovered a lot when we started looking at who can get into this system, and it dates back to when Y2K, on the night we were ready to throw the switch, that would be December 31st of 1999, we were working all night long, and I was there with my staff all night, but about 10 o'clock, 2 hours before we're ready to throw the switch, we find out from a county nearby here that their emergency management system, police and fire and so on, was riding on our backbone. In other words, they were coming into our system, using it for communication purposes and so on. Well, in 2 hours, we figured out a patch to continue to have access for their emergency management stuff, but we still were able to throw the system. Now, that was just one pretty dramatic example of people being able to get into our system without us knowing it. And in part, that is because of the long history that this department has in working with partners, counties, nonprofit organizations, cities to some extent. And so, you know, we've had these strong partnerships, and it has allowed access to systems that we probably shouldn't have allowed. And so part of the security office function is to make sure that if people have access to our system, it's under agreed upon, not so much contracts, but policies and procedures and so on. And we know who's coming in and out of our system, and we know for what purpose, and we know what they can access. So it's an office that's nearly a year old now and is a very important function for us. I'm going to skip. There's a couple of pages in your book that describe the forecasting capacity. We've got a presentation for you that's scheduled for tomorrow. As Sheila pointed out, we're going to have our new forecasting staff here along with Paul Warner and Tom Potowski, who have helped us develop this forecasting staff and the model that we're using, because I think it's really important for you to understand what we've tried to put together as a forecasting team. There's a package in the budget to support it. We went ahead and put this together using our current resources this biennium because we needed forecasting capacity for you. I mean, one of the things in the last session that I think the legislature was extraordinarily frustrated about, as was the governor, and I was running DAS at that time, and I can tell you I felt frustrated, is it was difficult to build this budget, this DHS budget, with the numbers changing frequently, particularly the OHP numbers. This forecasting group, Senator Westland understands what I'm talking about, I think, because he was on this and Representative Hansen was. And this forecasting group that we put together during the interim and the model that's been developed is intended to give you and the governor the best information we can. And it's intended to bring other people into that modeling that are from the outside, people like Paul Warner, Tom Potowski. We have some private sector economists that are part of reviewing our model. We want as many eyes on this as possible so we can get as close to possible as we can on caseload counts, cost per case, things like that that you build the budget on, that we all build the budget on. So there'll be an extended conversation about that tomorrow that I hope you find interesting and reassuring in terms of the information that you're getting from the department. We want to move next and talk a little bit about cost control and how we improve coordination of activities. And I'm going to ask Cindy to take over on this part of it.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Cindy Becker, Deputy Director of the Department of Human Services. If you follow along in your book, it's page 6. And I'm going to spend a little time talking about cost controls. One of the things I think that's important as kind of a context for that, and I think Representative Hanna asked this in phase one, really talking about what kind of cuts or reductions do you take in department-wide support services as you are reducing program.
We're looking at page six.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, if you look in the big book, all the way to the back behind department-wide support services and clear into the red tab behind that.
Right. Phase two.
Page six
two.
In that.
Smart. Sorry, I thought you were there.
I'm there.
Okay.
I'm
great.
Okay.
I'll wait a second. Everybody there? Representative Westland? Okay. Senator Westland?
Don't worry.
Okay.
I'm slow, but I'm persistent.
The last red tab.
It's a big book.
The first red tab past the last yellow tab.
Department-wide.
How's that?
Don't worry, I'll beat Lori.
And if you're colorblind, you're in trouble.
Well, it says phase two budget discussion.
Yeah. Cost control and coordination.
There we go.
Right.
I'm sorry. I should have pointed you all there to start with. That's my fault.
Director Weeks, when it looks like a fan running up here because we're flipping.
I thought you were just.
You'd know we're lost.
She'd cool me down and stuff.
So. Senator Weston, shall I continue?
Let's just say that Lori beat me, and I would be happy if you'd continue.
We only have, 4 weeks till the 14th of May, so.
Well, I'm in somebody else's book, and they didn't have a tab. I thought I was being cute. Go ahead.
Thank you. As I mentioned, Representative Hanna had talked about this earlier in phase one, about the types of reductions that we have taken in cost controls. And one thing I do want to point out, in the first section on the agency overview, which is what we finally call the rainbow report, which is all the different colors of cuts, the department-wide support services over the past several years has experienced about $40 million in reductions, which have been consistent with some of the cuts we've taken in program. In terms of cost controls in general, we have a variety of things that we have done, and I think it's important to mention cost control and cost avoidance. Because one of the things that has resulted due to the shared services is that we have taken on some really significant projects without asking for additional staff and department-wide support services. And the only reason we believe that we've been able to do that is because of the fact that we've consolidated those staff and have been able to look at ways to make them make the units more efficient. So that's really been the cost avoidance part in terms of workload we have assumed without asking for new staff. In terms of cost control and coordination, as Gary mentioned, each of the units prior to the shared services consolidation had their own everything. For example, for every policy that this agency had prior to the consolidation, there were really 9. So every division had their own interpretation. There were actually 9 travel forms. Now, there's really nothing exotic about a travel form, but we had 9 different ones. And one of the things that we really try to emphasize with the department is that programs need to be customized for clients. Business needs to be standardized for the agency. And what was happening is we had customized business practices by the former division as opposed to standardized department practices. And that's really where we have gone over the past several years. And that standardization has resulted in a lot more efficiency. Other things that we have done, cost allocation plans. We had 3 indirect plans and 5 cost allocation plans across the agency. We now have 1 comprehensive cost allocation plan, which reduces internal billing. The other thing that we used to do was bill each other a lot. So department-wide support services would bill the former divisions for services, and it was a lot of spinning for really the same dollars.
We also have our own warrant authority now that we used to have to go through Department of Justice. So we have saved some dollars in that respect when it comes to getting additional authority for overpayments. We also have increased the number of people who use automated time reporting. Now, you might think that is kind of a no-brainer, but again, by consolidating things in department-wide support services, we put the emphasis on standardization. And we had several thousand people, even though we have an automated system, which is not a great system, I will tell you. It's a legacy system. But we had a lot of people still reporting on paper, and that results in lots of errors and actually some dollars going out the door. We have really changed that, and we're kind of at the last end of getting people to report automatically. But again, it's an emphasis because of the standardization. We've emphasized some different priorities in department-wide support services. We also moved from a lot of paper transactions. I think we're over the hump, at least, in terms of electronic capabilities. Not only can we electronically deposit checks for providers, but we're also developing the capabilities to electronically take billings from providers. And part of that is as a result of HIPAA, which is the transactions and code sets, which was really one of the other pieces of that, so that providers can file their claims electronically. We have the capability to do that. Many of the providers are not on board yet, and we're working over the next year to move those providers and bring them on board. That would be a savings for the providers, quite honestly, because they will be paid faster. It will be a savings for us because we won't need as many staff to process paper claims. We've also added additional staff in financial services. Gary mentioned the recovery consolidation, but we clearly have shown that our financial services recovery staff more than pays for itself, and we have some data on that if you're interested. In the Office of Contracts and Procurement, we also had several ways that each of the former divisions were going about and doing contracts. Some of those right, and quite honestly, some of those wrong. We have standardized that, and we have developed templates, electronic templates for the various clusters to use to also increase that processing time. And the other piece of that is the whole area of contract administration. One of the things that we found is we were getting our arms around contract development, but as you know, contract administration is really a critical part of the process. We developed 14,000 contracts and amendments a biennium. That's a lot of contracts. But again, the contracts unit is responsible for developing those contracts. The clusters are responsible for monitoring those contracts. And while we were putting a lot of time and effort in the development, we really needed to switch that now that we have that pretty well standardized, into training our clusters, our program people, on what it means to monitor and administer those contracts to make sure we're getting what we're paying for and to make sure we're not paying more for what we originally put together. We've also developed the Office of Forms and Document Management. Again, we had forms that were developed all throughout the agency, and we have also forms and documents that were distributed all throughout the agency. We have consolidated that, and one of the things that we did is move the distribution of all those forms to DAS. They already have a system set up. It didn't make sense for us to have a duplicate system. We transferred that function and FTE to DAS to be able to perform that for us. We're also in the process. We have over 1,500 forms in the agency, and we are in the process of going through all of those and trying to ratchet down the numbers to make sure that, number one, we are not duplicating forms. The only duplication we want really is in multiple languages. But we also have a bunch of forms that are on the system that nobody uses. So we're going through those, and we're going to purge those over the next year. Again, we couldn't do that.
Yes, Senator Wessel.
I just taken by your 14,000 contracts and amendments of biennium, and that's 7,000 a year, and by my back of the envelope math for business days, and I went to the Brian Lashman School of Mathematics, so this could be up. But that's
oh God.
Yeah. Really. I have burdens I have to carry. That's like 25 or 30 a day. And some of those are very simple, I'm sure, wordsmithing.
No,
some
never.
Some contracts, it takes months and months and months. That's a lot.
Center West, and we agree. We have, you know, the big, probably the big contracts are, well, you have obviously several with OMAP, but we also have the county interagency intergovernmental agreements where many of our dollars work through. And we have a lot of their short-term contracts, particularly in the area of children, adults, and families.
Yeah.
So it is an enormous amount of contracting that we have. I think it's probably more than most agencies combined.
Well, I just think it puts in perspective the breadth of what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, some of this stuff's all interrelated, and so you can't change one without the other. And there's an enormous task.
Thank you. We agree.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monis Anderson.
Also, I would like to point out I was on one of those people in management that had to deal with some of these contracts, and I don't think you have even one contract that's simple. I think each one is very involved.
Well, there it is. That's why it's difficult.
Mr. Chairman, we've, just to add a little bit of this, we've spent months now working with counties on trying to redesign our contract with county governments for mental health services and public health services, and we're pretty close. But I got to tell you, working, you know, we have our attorneys at DOJ. We're our colleagues and give us advice, and then we're working with 36 county councils who each have an opinion about what the contract should look like and how it should read and so on. But a lot of good work has been done on that, and I think we're going to get a contract for the counties that is going to be a better contract than what we've had over the past few years. So,
Director Weeks, might it be fair to say they each have an independent opinion of all 36?
Mr. Chairman, they do. They're bad, they're wrong, or incorrect, but they're doing their job as they see it necessary to protect the county.
Well, we're just here to tell you that Douglas, Multnomah, and Deschutes counties are right. Don't forget that.
I think this committee would admit to the complexity of your task on contracting.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I might take this opportunity just to give you some other, they're not outcome measures, but they are workload to, again, I think it underscores the complexity of what we do. We manage 174 leases across the state with all of our branch offices. We have 25,000 web pages that we manage. We process approximately 15,000 criminal history checks a month. We also receive approximately 137,000 claims, medical provider claims per month. And I could go on, I guess, but I think that it's important to understand, and I think some of you certainly who have been around the legislative process for a while know that these numbers don't abate. They actually increase over time. But I think the good news is that we have not, because of the consolidation and the shared services, we have not had to, and the use of technology, increase all of our staffing to deal with these increases. In terms of, on page 7, in terms of professional services and purchasing contracts, I think that we've gone over those. As you know from the beginning presentation, approximately 80% of the dollars in the department go out the door, either in a direct client benefits or through contracts to counties or providers. We have certainly personal and professional services contracts in our budgets, but that really accounts for a small percentage of the dollars. Most of that goes out in the way of program services. I'm going to now move to packages, if that's all right.
Please proceed.
Thank you. And it's my understanding that it's not necessary to go into the essential budget level packages, but instead I'm going to start with the reduction packages on page 15, which is the 090.
Just for the record, I'm there. I got there first.
Okay, if I may proceed. As you can see, the department-wide support services has almost $10.5 million of general fund reductions in its budget for 2005-07. The majority of those dollars are in service and supplies in the areas of travel, office expense, training, professional services, et cetera. I'm not going to go into the detail of that unless you want me to. But it's just a combination throughout department-wide support services. Then the next area, $1.4 million, is closing four small and four medium buildings. We had a run on tape measures out in the field because everybody was trying to see which one was small and medium. But what I can tell you is that we don't have that totally ratcheted down at this point. We are looking at a variety of areas that include Portland, Salem, the coast, North Bend. There really are Lincoln City all around the state. So we have not finalized any of those, and they will not all be in certainly East Multnomah, but there will be some in Portland, clearly. And you would expect that in your larger population centers, but they won't be just in Portland and Salem as well. Staff reductions, the budget includes 17 positions that would be eliminated. 11 of those are in Office of Information Systems, and then we have one or two throughout the other offices and department-wide support services. We also have a reduction in inflation, which you will see in every one of the clusters. There's a 25% reduction in the CPI for next biennium, so rather than 24 months, it's for 18 months. And last but not least is what's called the smart buy reduction. I don't know how familiar you are with this from the Department of Administrative Services, but this was an initiative actually that Gary and I initiated when we were at Department of Administrative Services. It really is an initiative that the state has not done a very good job in the past of utilizing its purchasing power. And what strategic sourcing does, which the smart buy is the name of the program in Oregon, but it is essentially a strategic sourcing where the state as an entity combines its purchasing power to get better pricing. And the first couple of areas were around information technology and office supplies, and all of the agencies well, you'll see, I think, savings in all the agencies' budgets as a result of this. This particular area in smart buy reduction, the majority of this is around the PC purchases. As a result of strategic sourcing, we saved significant dollars over previous biennia in the purchase of PCs. In the next packages, and these are our policy packages, the majority of these packages, you'll see quite a few of them, are the department-wide support services portions of other packages that you will see in the subsequent presentations. I can go through those if you like, or I can just focus on the ones that are purely department-wide support services. What is your druthers?
Does the committee have an opinion on that? Shall we? Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I guess I would suggest taking at least a few minutes on each package to talk about what the DWSS specific cost elements are in that package.
Okay.
Rather than not go through, for example, the whole Medicare Modernization Act background and timetable, but just focus on what these elements are in these packages.
Thank you. Without any other comment or objection, Ms. Becker, okay. Let's continue that way.
I will proceed. On page 15, it's policy package 103. This is, and you'll hear about this in the Children, Adults, and Families presentation. This is Attorney General representation for child welfare. The DWSS portion of this is $500,000 in general fund and $800,000 in total funds. And what we do here is this reflects the positions and the position change in CAF. What you'll see is the S&S for those positions, and there's 42 positions you'll hear about later. The S&S for those positions is in the department-wide support services budget. The next area is a policy package. I hope it's one. Is it 110? 104. Okay, I obviously don't have them in order. Sorry.
You want to issue
this? Oh, yeah, I've got this. Oh, that was 104.
That was 104.
Okay, I'm just kidding. I'm going to go back to 103.
No, you did 103.
Did I three?
Yes, you're at 104.
103 for provider tax.
Oh, I got it. Okay, all right, I'm kidding. Let me start again. Package 103. I just said package 104. Sorry.
Right.
Package 103 basically is the SNS portion of the positions that are added for the Oregon Health Plan standard. Okay, so package 104 is the SNS for the positions added in CAF. Okay, now I'm on package 110. Package 110, again, are the positions, or the SNS support for the positions that are added in CAF for the Medicare, in SPD for the Medicare modernization. So the three positions that we've added in SPD, and this is the SNS for those positions. Package 112. Now this one is
Ms. Becker,
yes.
When you pass through these as we're going to do, and I know that you are giving the impact for DWSS, why don't you mention the other program that it touches on as well?
Okay.
Just like with 110, I think that's seniors, people with disabilities, but let's try to touch so we know where they're coming from.
Okay, sorry.
Or two. No, just a point. Thanks.
Well, Policy Package 104, that is CAF. Those are the positions supporting CAF. Policy Package 110 is the positions that will be in SPD. Now, Policy Package 112, Gary mentioned this previously, and that is the State Automated Child Welfare Information System. And this package actually is in OIS, and it will be the system will be supporting the caseworkers in the field. This the reason that we've decided how excuse me.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's on the phone.
I wasn't doing the ventriloquist.
Okay, I thought, okay, who's talking? Your mouth's not moving, so what's that about? This is quite a committee. SACWIS will be replacing what's called a FACES, which is the Family and Child Information System. FACES was a system developed, it's a client service system that was developed by our staff. It is an outdated system and is in an application language that I think three people in the state of Oregon know, which is Smalltalk. So we decided that it did not meet the federal requirements for the Child Welfare Information System. And we decided that rather than continuing to put in dollars in a system that really can't be supported over time, that it made sense to do something similar to what we're doing in MMIS, is go look for a system that another state has, bring that system in, and rather than go ahead and develop a system ourselves. Because SACWIS is, all states are going to have to do this. Some states are further along than others, and this gets into the buy versus build. We think it's much more cost effective to buy a system that's working, make minimal tweaks for Oregon rather than to build something totally customized for Oregon. So we, instead of putting more money into FACES, we are going to be acquiring a system, the SACWIS system. And this system, the dollars in here, the general fund dollars, are to pay for the debt service for the certificates of participation for the SACWIS system.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
In terms of the dollar amounts that are associated with that, if you didn't see it before, on page 8, there's a summary, and it gives the dollar amounts for each of the policy packages. So if you're looking at policy package 112, if you look about two-thirds of the way, three-quarters of the way down the page, you can see the dollar amounts associated with that. And as Cindy said, in this case, there's the 1.9 general fund that pays the debt service, and then you can see the certificates of participation proceeds as other funds, and then the federal matching funds.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. That's a good reference to mark, too.
Thank you. The next package is policy package 115, which is basically the positions. There's seven positions here to continue the support of the forecasting caseload function. Those positions are, we have them as LDs, as biennium, and this would continue them as permanent full-time positions. Any questions? Okay. The next we have is package 119, and this is enhanced overpayment collection staff. Again, this is an area where we felt if it was a good idea in 05-07, it was a better idea to start in 03-05, because all of these positions more than bring in the cost of their...
Chair.
Senator Monastery.
Yeah, let's go back to the policy 115.
Okay.
When you say that by adding seven permanent positions, Are they right now temporary, and if and how long have we had them in, as a temporary?
Mr. Chair, Senator Montes-Anderson, those are limited duration positions, and we've hired them over the, within the last 6 months.
6 months. And
7 months.
Follow-up. And the reason, then, to go permanent is you know that the caseload will continue to increase?
Senator, it's not a question of the caseload increasing. It's a question of having the appropriate capacity and capability and in-house resources to do those forecasts. We had really a very, very small unit, and they could not keep up with or actually do all of the caseload forecasting that had sent before this was embedded in various divisions throughout the department. So we've consolidated that. We have shored it up with the appropriate staffing. So we went from really way less than adequate staff to a group that we feel will be adequate to do the forecasting in the future.
And follow-up?
Follow-up, please.
So how many, you might have said it, but I didn't, how many are in doing this function right now?
Excuse me, how many, is it the seven or? There are six now, and this will add seven.
Okay, so there's six. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add to what Cindy said, that when I came on to this job, one of the messages from the governor was you've got to develop a forecasting function that's more reliable than anything we saw in the past. And so these positions they're actually double filled. We used existing positions for the seven that are on here. They were all hired knowing they were double filled. And we believed we had the support of the emergency board and fiscal office in doing this, but this now sort of creates a permanent forecasting office and staffs it with people that are experienced forecast economists, accountants, those kinds of folks, you know, who really understand the forecasting business. And that's what this package does. It takes a group that we've built temporarily to really help us try to get as good of information for you all this session as we could, but then creates the permanent forecasting office on into the future.
Just follow up.
Follow up, please.
Do other states have this? And what if we find that even with this group, it doesn't make any difference? It's just too difficult to really do adequate forecasting.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Montes-Anderson, other states do have this. I mean, the states that I've worked with all along the East Coast, the large umbrella agencies, they have a permanent professional staff that helps forecast caseloads, cost per case, and so on like that. I'd be surprised if this didn't help us compared to what we've done in the past, which is not a very good job. And that's, I say that to you without negative comment to the people that have tried to do it. We just haven't had the resource to do a really good job. And I think it's analogous to what you do with the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors. Now, Tom Petoskey has a council of economic advisors. They're some of the finest minds around economic forecasting in the state, and that's what helps him design the forecast model for you. Now, has it been right all the time? No. It has
five special sessions.
We had five special sessions. But you know what? For Tom had the benefit of the best thinking in this state about forecasting what the economy was going to be, and it still wasn't good. But it was as good as it was going to get for you. And that's what we're trying to model, is something very similar that brings people outside of DHS into looking at the numbers and trying to give you the very best forecast. And is it always going to be on the nose? It won't. It won't be, but I think it'll be better than anything we've ever done in the past.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Right now we're on policy package 119, which is the enhanced overpayment collection staff. We're looking at here, and you'll see some of this in CAF. There are 13 positions, of which six are in department-wide support services, and the dollars, the savings, actually get reflected in the CAF budget. So So we're looking at a net general fund savings of $2.9 million. And we have some of those positions on right now because we felt that it didn't, since we know we're going to collect more money than we spend on the positions, we thought it made more sense to start those positions earlier rather than later. The next package is policy package 123, which is the HIPAA security rule package. And this package is, and as Gary mentioned, is to work on completing the implementation of the security measures necessary to meet compliance with the HIPAA security rule. And we also, these positions will work with implementation of the various security measures and controls that we need to have to be in compliance with DAS's cybersecurity program. We've also, as Gary mentioned, the role-based access will be implementing this biennium, which is something that both the HIPAA security rule and in previous Secretary of State audits we were found deficient in, essentially where what this means, role-based access, where too many people had information that went beyond the scope of their job. In other words, they had access to information in our applications that they really didn't need to do their job. What role-based access will do is say, if you're a caseworker, these are the types of files you should have access to. These are the types of client files. If you are a client surveyor, these are the types of files you should have access to. So it will really hone down the information that an individual has. They'll have the information they need to do their job. They just won't have information that is unnecessary to get their work done. So this is both an issue with Secretary of State and with HIPAA to make sure that people only have access to what they need. And these individuals will really are the bridge between the technology folks and the program folks to get this implemented. Policy Package 127 is the Oregon State Public Health Lab rent increase. I don't know if any of you have ever been to the public health lab, but it's like the current one is really like someone's old basement, unfortunately. And I think that's being kind. Anyway, this was approved last session by the legislature. This is a joint lab with the Department of Environmental Quality and the State Public Health Lab. That lab is going to be, actually the building was purchased, and that is going to be in Hillsborough, and there is some additional rent dollars that are needed to sustain this. This is also in combination with some dollars that we'll get through newborn screening, but the newborn screening revenue is not enough to meet the increased rent needs.
Ms. Becker, did we increase the space as well?
Chair Hanna, we did increase the space, yes. The space that they currently have is, well, it was never intended for a lab. It was really never intended for humans, I think, but they're tiny little crawl spaces that are really in the basement of a building in Portland State University. So this will also enable them to meet the bioterrorism, I think, level 3 standard.
And how many folks work there?
Oh, goodness. I'm sorry, I don't know that offhand. We can get that information for you.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Juana Sanderson.
Where is the new lab located? Is it still on the Portland State campus?
No, Senator Juana Sanderson, it's going to be in Hillsborough. The Portland State University wanted us out of the building because they wanted that space for classroom space, so we had to vacate PSU.
Thank you.
Please continue.
The last package is Policy Package 129, which is a federally mandated Medicaid quality control package. This package is necessary in order for us to comply with Improper Payments Information Act of 2002, and it will be implementing the Payment Error Rate Measurement Program. You'll see positions in DWSS, which will be part of our audit and consulting services, and there's some additional positions in children, adults, and families. As Sheila mentioned earlier, there are a handful of agencies that have piloted the requirements of this, which is an incredibly detailed review of all components and medical documentation on billings. You have to go into individual client claims. The concern on the part of the states that have implemented this is that the federal government, to be honest with you, is not ponying up to their side of the table. They're concerned about the number of positions and the staffing levels and the federal match that the federal government is participating in. The federal government in their final regulations didn't didn't seem to matter. So the states are required to do this. And if we don't get these positions and if we can't comply with these new requirements, it will put our entire Medicaid program in jeopardy. It's really very, very detailed review of extensive samples of claims and billings. With that, that's the end of the policy packages, and I'll turn it back to Director Weeks.
I have one question at the end of the policy packages, and I didn't add this up, but maybe you know. The 31 FTE increase, is that the net change, including the 17 that we removed, or is that just 31 new within those packages we just finished discussing?
Those are just those packages. It's not a net figure.
Okay.
It's not a net figure.
Thank you.
Excuse me, I don't have 31. Some of the positions are in other parts of the department.
When you go back to page 8, clarification too. Were you going back to the page 8 on the option package summary? Because I'd like to have you explain just briefly the columns, the categories, on page 8. And when you say base budget, when you say at the very top of that graph, mm-hmm. page 8, is that base budget of what?
Jan, you want to mention it? It's 0305.
Mr. Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, the base budget starts off of the 2003-5, I'm having to keep my years straight, but the current budget that the department is operating under. And it looks at reductions that need to be made. It's what we've been calling your chair has called the current service level. Comes out of that by the pluses and minuses. You look at inflation that is necessary. You phase out packages that are.
I think I understand that part. I think what I want to know is when you, at the very top, you say there are 871 FTE, and that's total DHS. Just these packages.
It's that department-wide support services has 871 FTE, and then through the various packages, there are changes to end up in the governor's rec of 920 FTE.
I'm with you now on it.
Okay, hey, Mr. Chairman, we'll go ahead and proceed on page 19. We have a summary of legislation that affects DWSS. So there's other legislation affecting other clusters. We have three pieces of legislation. They're all what we consider to be efficiency changes to the statutes. And one of the problematic things here is none of these three have yet been scheduled for a hearing. So I guess part of our discussion with you would be to see if we can get some help to try to get these scheduled. But I'll run through them. The first one, House Bill 2086, is provider health care tax assessment payments. This gives us the authority, and it gives tax-paying providers the ability to pay their taxes electronically through this national automated clearinghouse. Right now, the statutes say that the taxes must be paid for by those providers that are taxed with physically with the report. So they send us a check, they send us the report on what they're paying the taxes on, and we have to manage all that. Providers would much prefer to do this electronically, as would we. And so we need the authority in the statutes for electronic payment of these taxes.
Director Weeks, pardon me, do you know what committee this is in? Know where it is?
I'm not even sure it's been assigned.
Mr. Chair, it's been assigned to State and Federal Affairs.
Okay. State and Federal.
Thank you.
Is that true of all three of these?
No.
I shouldn't.
The House Bill 2146 was assigned to Judiciary, but 2147 is also in State and Federal Affairs.
So 2146, the negligent third-party claims, right now, we don't have the ability to independently pursue any kind of recovery action against a third party. We have to have the consent of the client or the recipient to go after a third party recovery. And this bill lets us do that. It lets us essentially transfer the client's right to go after a third party to us. So we have the ability to go after a third party to try to recover claims. I mean, in many cases now, there's no, having to work through the client, there's no benefit to the client. It's very difficult to run the client down, get the authority to pursue this third party, because there's nothing in it for the client. So we want to try to recover under this law, and we think it's much more efficient to do it if we have the authority to do it. And the final one, which is HB 2147, under current law, we maintain these separate suspense accounts into which providers pay funds in, and then we have to manage these suspense accounts. We would like the ability just to do away with the suspense accounts and use the statewide financial management system as the place where we deposit these resources. There's no problem accounting for who paid what by providers and so on. It's just an efficiency measure for us. Rather than having to manage suspense accounts and then move money from suspense accounts into another account, it just doesn't make any sense to do it. So these are all what we view to be opportunities for us to improve the efficiency of the way a lot of the financial side of DWS operates, and we're hopeful we can begin to get some conversation in these two committees where the bills have been assigned, but as yet they have not been scheduled. So,
Director Weeks, I want to back up to 2086. Do the healthcare providers currently use the electronic payment system for some other method other than their taxes? I mean, are they currently using a system that would allow them to pay their tax assessment? I mean, it's not you're not going to have to create something new.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you mean like their tax assessment to their state taxes and so on? Like, I'm sure they do that electronically, but these are the only taxes that we collect from this group of healthcare providers. And the law is really clear. It says you have to have the physical check accompanying the report. Okay. And the providers, because they are used to paying their taxes and other fees electronically, don't like having to do that. So,
okay. Mr. Chair, if I could clarify, was the question, would you need to build a separate system to do this?
Yes.
Okay. So there's an existing.
Well, but that's what the National Automated Clearinghouse does. You pay in there. That's the system where they do the electronic transfers and so on.
So there would be no additional cost to the department to do this. It would be.
Yeah, that Sheila, that's my understanding, because we're going to use an existing electronic system. So. I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question, Mr. Chairman. So.
And Mr. Chair, is there a problem with HIPAA or confidentiality on this type of transaction?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Moniz Anderson, not on the payment of provider taxes, no, because there's no, they're not identifying individuals as they pay their taxes. So
thank you.
We're getting taxes off gross revenues. Mr. Chairman, that concludes what we had prepared for DWSS, and we're happy to answer other questions on the material. Tomorrow, as I said, we're scheduled to have a full presentation on the forecasting group and the forecasting model that we're using today. So.
There have been times on the electronic payments and the electronic feasibility of things that you would hope that the state could pass a piece of legislation that would give like blanket authority to use electronic systems whenever they could prove to be compatible, and because otherwise I think we do about a half dozen of these a session of different pieces of electronic compatibility that really is much more of an administrative issue than a policy issue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that would be a good benefit for us to do that. I think many of these statutes were written before we had the kind of capacity we do today to do all this electronic financing and electronic transfers and so on like that. So it is a matter of kind of going back and cleaning up the authority. So.
Any further questions or issues for the good of the order before we adjourn?
Mr. Chair, I'd just note, previously a couple members had asked for additional information on the human resources function within DWSS, and so the agency has provided us with some additional information. I'll hand that out to you so you can look at it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Then we will be adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can I get a copy of whatever?